Welcome back, Boils and Ghouls, to Handle with Scare, a horror podcast brought to you by Totally Drunk and Vashti. Be sure to stay connected with us via social media on Twitter at Handle with Scare. You can email the show at handlewithscarepod@gmail.com. And of course, you can find more information on our podcast and more via our website at handlewithscarepod.com. Now that that's out of the way, let me introduce you to my co-host. She puts the cute in execute. It's Vashti. Vash, it's always a pleasure to sit down and chat with you. And we are hot off the heels of our Into the Dark double feature that went down on this week's Twisted Tuesday. How's the week been treating you?
It's been really good. Tuesday was great. I loved Puka. I actually really love Puka. Puka Lives, the second one. I thought it was great. What was it? The rest of the week has been busy, just with work and everything like that, and training and doing a lot of other stuff, working from home. But yeah, I'm done with the week now, so I'm relaxed and I'm happy to be here with you, Totem. Always happy to be here with you on Saturdays and on Tuesdays for Twisted Tuesday. So I'm happy.
Yes. So a lot of stuff going on this week. Quite a bit of news, actually. You know, I did stay up pretty late to watch last night's The Last Drive-In, which featured Troma's War, which is a Troma movie that I had never seen. And then I followed that up with the Japan horror comedy One Cut of the Dead, which was actually another one that I've had on my watch list forever that I've just never gotten around to. So very rare occurrence where they're actually showcasing two things that I haven't seen. And the end monologue from last night's episode of The Last Drive-In on Shudder is definitely something to go back and watch for anyone that considers themselves to be an aspiring filmmaker. I know Shudder had posted it over on YouTube, so you can find it there. Or also on my Twitter as well, so go check that out. But let's jump into the news. We actually got quite a bit for tonight's rundown. So to start things off, speaking of Shudder, we do know that they have continued to just go out and acquire additional rights for new movies and new series to add to their streaming service. And on Wednesday, Shudder announced that they have acquired the rights to Scare Package, which is a anthology movie that is a horror comedy. And, you know, initially I saw this and I was like, you know what? Based off of the name alone, we have to cover this because it's so close to ours. And I just felt the need to do that. But this is going to premiere on Shudder, whether it's, you know, Shudder US, Canada, UK on June 18th. And what this consists of is seven different stories covering multiple different subgenres within horror. And like the centerpiece of all of this is this horror emporium where it basically has like a store owner who is relating all of these tales to a new employee to somewhat like demonstrate like the rules of the genre. So you have different vignettes directed by, you know, some pretty notable names within the genre. You have the twin filmmakers Courtney and Hillary Andujar, who did Girl on the Third Floor. That was the CM Punk haunted house movie that we watched not too long ago. You have you have Anthony Cousins, who did Peekaboo, Emily Higgins from VHS, Chris McEnroy from Death Metal, Noah Sagan from Knives Out, and then Baron Vaughn, who did one of my personal favorite blaxploitation movies, Black Dynamite. I don't know if you've ever seen that one, but if you haven't, Vash, I highly recommend that one.
Yes, I have, and I'm definitely going to go back and watch it again, but it's good, yes.
So you have all of this, and you know we're pretty big fans of like the anthology series, obviously. You know, most recently on Shudder, they did the Creepshow series, which is now premiering on AMC now. And if I'm not mistaken,
I was so happy with that one.
If I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure like the Blu-ray release got pushed back until, I want to say June as well, because of the AMC deal. But it should be out for our home viewers any day now. But you know, when it comes to anthology movies, there's always like the cautious line that you have to draw between how many stories is too many versus, well, how many out of that lot are actually going to be good, because there have definitely been some, you know, series out there where, you know, you only have a couple of really solid entries and it's just really hard to nail that sort of consistency from beginning to end.
Exactly.
So be on the lookout for that, and you know, we will have a way for you to watch that ahead of time here in just a little bit. But let's talk about current releases, Vosh. Okay. So obviously, we still have the pandemic going on. We don't know what the status is for, you know, reopening theaters. But Disney did announce that they have pushed back the New Mutants to the big screen. And now it's set to release on August 28th. Now, I know what you're probably thinking. Well, Totem, I've heard this before, and you were absolutely correct. Like, this movie was supposed to be out in April of 2018. But it's had so many additional release date shifts since that initial announcement that I don't even know if it's actually coming out. I will believe it when I actually see it, and until that happens, I don't know what to think. But you know, the last date we heard was April 3rd. That didn't happen. And for those that aren't familiar with the New Mutants, this is one of the X-Men properties that follows five young mutants who are essentially like discovering what their abilities are. And they're also being held captive in this secret facility against their will. So think like X-Men mixed in with like Dream Warriors, and that is essentially what you get out of the New Mutants. Granted, this is a PG-13 movie, so I don't know how much there will be in terms of gore, but the tension, at least from what we have seen within the trailers, has been holding up so far. But, you know, you have some pretty notable actors and actresses in this series, ranging from, you know, Anya Taylor-Joy, who was in The Witch. She's also been in Class and Split. You have Charlie Heaton from Stranger Things. You also have Blue Hunt, who was in The Originals. And, of course, you know, you also have Arya from Game of Thrones. So, like, there's a lot going on in this series, but, you know, I'm not as close to comics as you are, so I'm not familiar with like how close you are to this particular story within the X-Men universe. But what are your thoughts on just the way that this movie looks and the fact that it seems like we've just been waiting for years on end at this point?
For me, I'm not going to be very for right now. I'm not really happy about it. I've never really liked how they've done the X-Men series or the X-Men movies and how they have transitioned and taken some X-Men characters and put them into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And then they have their X-Men their own cinematic universe. But it's all over the place for me. For a lover of Chris Claremont's comics, Phoenix, Sentinels, all old school X-Men. And then when they came out with New Mutants, the comic book, when they came out with Exiles, those are great comics and everything. But I don't really have much faith in them transitioning how they should be in the comic book to the big screen. I think there's going to be a lot of things that are going to be missing. So for me, it's like you are. I'll believe it when I see it. And I don't have high hopes because loving X-Men as much as I do, we were watching Avengers Age of Ultron last night while we were having dinner. And it just really irritated me that Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver were in that movie. They're not supposed to be. They're Magneto's children. So they should have nothing to do with the Marvel Cinematic Universe at all. They should be standalone with the X-Men universe, and they should have put them in there with those movies, and they shouldn't have intertwined, because how are you going to meld it together and have the stories coincide or even make sense to me? So I can go about this all day, but that's just me. If you want to check out some online comics, New Mutants online comics, go check them out. You can find digital copies of them. You can find digital copies of Exiles that will take you through. It's pretty much after X-Men are done and through, there's these new mutants that come along. There's their children, the children of the X-Men and stuff like that. And other new mutants that come along. And it's them being, like Totem said, being held captive kind of like some of the X-Men were and stuff like that. So it's a younger, it goes from just being X-Men where they're older to younger, a younger group. And that's what Disney wants to do. Disney wants to make it adhere to a younger crowd, to like my niece's crowd, who my oldest niece, who is 13. You know, she's going to love stuff like this because these kids are going to be 13, 14 years old, and they're just going to be becoming mutants and they're going to be manifesting their powers. And it's going to be PG-13 and it's going to be cute, but I still don't have high hopes for it.
Yeah, one of the issues I have with this, outside of the fact that it's gotten pushed back like 8 times leading up to this point now, is I'm still trying to wash the disdain out of my mouth from watching Dark Phoenix in the theaters.
I still didn't watch that movie.
Like, the X-Men movies have been very hit or miss. I haven't really found one that I thought was even middle ground. So I feel like every time I go into a situation where I'm watching an X-Men movie, I really don't know what to expect. So I have to middle my expectations and not really expect that much. And in those situations where it turns out like a Dark Phoenix, knowing that there were a lot of rewrite issues, I'm not surprised. And, you know, if it happens to be a good movie, then, you know, all the more power to it. But you know, there's just been more misses than hits, but I do like this kind of story. Obviously, Dream Warriors has really been one of the more prominent stories in itself within Nightmare on Elm Street. And, you know, for me, Disney hasn't really done too much within the genre, like with horror. So, like, I'm always intrigued to see what sort of approach that they are going to take. So I'm still looking forward to it, but knowing how long this has been on the shelf doesn't necessarily give me such high expectations. So I hope it'll be good, but you know, hope can only get you so far. It doesn't necessarily deliver in the long run.
That is correct.
But anyways, we do have a lot of things that are going to be available here very soon, as we have the CFF coming up this next weekend. That is the Chattanooga Film Festival, which has decided to move the event entirely online this year. So there are full access badges available to purchase for $30. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, these badges actually went on sale yesterday. And, you know, if you don't want, you know, 3-day access, you can actually purchase single day options as well for $10. So the event is going to feature several different panels and live events. And this will be going on May 22nd through May 25th. So I wanted to like highlight just a couple of things that they have on tap. And there is quite a bit to kind of like take in here. You have Joe Bob Briggs sitting down with the filmmaker Mick Garris on the making of Stephen King's The Stand. They're also honoring GWAR's 30th anniversary of their Scum Dogs of the Universe record. You also have Joe Dante being presented with the CFF Lifetime Achievement Award. And I know they have at least one world premiere, and that is for a new Brazilian horror movie called Skull. Now, I was going through... I was going through, like, the lineup and, you know, saying, like, okay, like, how many of these movies would I genuinely want to sit down to watch? And, you know, one of the movies we actually already talked about tonight, Scare Package, which Shudder had acquired, is actually part of this film festival. So, you know, if I don't feel like waiting a month, I mean, it's not that long, but, like, you know, to see that early would be a treat. But I have to say, looking at some of the lineup... there were definitely some standouts for me that I want to talk about. So none of these I've seen, obviously, because all of these are independent. They're on the festival scene. One of them is called Eat Brains Love, which is directed by Rodman Fielder, who did Idle Hands. And this one is a zombie comedy that is more in line with, like, the infection spreading through sex. So think more like It Follows or Contracted, which had like 2 parts.
Okay, that's actually hilarious. And I'm looking at the Chattanooga Film Festival org right now, and I'm looking at the plot. or not the plot, but just the overview of what the movie is going to be about. And it's hilarious. It looks like it's going to be hilarious.
Yeah, a lot of blood splatter by the trailer that I watched. And mm-hmm. there was one scene in particular in the trailer where, you know, there's a corpse on the dinner table and, you know, they're looking to, you know, just consume flesh. And, you know, they do tend to target some of the more, you know, criminals or, you know, shady people when it comes to, you know, feeding their hunger. So, you know, they're always looking for, like, sex offenders or things like that. You know, people that generally wouldn't be missed if they decided to, you know, go missing or, you know, disappear, whatever. But there's a scene where they're at the dinner table and they're looking to just chow down. And, you know, you see, like, the teenage girl and, you know, she's ready to just consume some flesh. And then the older woman that's next to her tells her, you know, to, like, you know, put on your, you know, your napkin or your paper, whatever. Because they're not savages, mm-hmm. you know, so they still have a little bit of class to them, despite the fact that they have been turned. So that's one in particular that I'm looking forward to, just because, you know, zombies have a really soft spot in my heart, and I want to see what they're going to do with that. But if that's not your cup of tea, I do know that there's also a biopic for Lucio Fulci, called Fulci for Fake, which is directed by Simone Cafiti. So Fulci, very prominent director from Italy. He did Zombie 2 and 3, The New York Ripper, A Cat in the Brain. And this is going to have, like, a lot of, like, you know, never-before-seen footage, photos, and interviews. So definitely going to be one I want to check out. But there's one other movie that really stood out to me just due to the subject matter. And this one centers around objectophilia, which, if you don't know what that is when someone is basically attracted to an inanimate object. So this movie is called Jumbo, and it's directed by Zoe Wittig. And it basically revolves around, and this is based on a true story, someone who ends up falling in love with a Tilt-A-Whirl ride at an amusement park. And, you know, I really like those bizarre, outlandish, you know, things. So I'm kind of curious to see what this is going to entail. It's kind of like when I watched Swallow recently, which is another one of the indie films, with the pregnant chick that just likes to just randomly swallow sharp objects. But there's a lot of good stuff in here, quite a few things within the lineup that I would be interested in seeing. So even if you're doing something for only like $10 for one day access, you basically would only have to watch like one movie to really get, you know, that sort of face value out of the one day badge type of deal.
Actually, that's actually a good idea. And I know you'll be doing the one day, correct?
More than likely. I'm pretty sure the way that it works is the access starts like when you purchase the badge. So like if you do a mm-hmm. one day, then you have like 24 hours since like okay. the point of purchase. But I don't know yet. Like I got to see like what my work schedule is going to be. But
keep me posted.
I don't know. 20 seconds. So it starts on Friday and then ends on Monday. Either way, there's enough like good stuff here to really take in. But was there anything else in particular, like story-wise, that you were looking forward to potentially viewing here? Because really, like, we haven't seen anything like an online film festival, so this is a good opportunity to, you know, go out and see what's out there on the scene.
Let's see. I was actually looking at, which one was it? Well, it has Creepshow, so I'm always looking forward to that. And I love Creepshow. So watching that in the film festival will be great for the new anthology series that'll be coming out. I would love that, it just by itself. And what would be the other one? Yeah, and it has episodes with Greg Nicotero in it and writer Phil de Blasi. So, yeah, that's great. So I'm loving that.
I think they were doing, like, behind-the-scenes stuff with, like, Grey Matter in particular.
Yeah. That. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's about it. And then maybe Maybe the other one would be Hollywood Horror House, where there's an aging actress living in her Hollywood mansion with a retinue of elderly servants, employees, a new mentally disturbed personal assistant who schemes to take over the large estate, which I'm guessing she's just, this person's just going to start killing off people. So that would be nice. So that would be a good one to watch too.
Yeah. Skull, which has its premiere at this festival, looks pretty enticing to me because it is a slasher.
That's true too. That one does look good.
A lot of people are just right off the bat saying it's one of the more insane like midnight movies out there from filmmaker Capel Furman. It channels his inner Jason Voorhees, and it's basically like this story that revolves around an ancient mask that possesses the human form, and then, you know, they start to commit like these very visceral sacrifices, you know, of vengeance in order to incarnate its god. So, like, this looks like it's going to be a bloody damn good time, and I'm looking forward to this. A couple other, like, notable titles as well as, like, Coco D, Coco Da, which I've seen the trailer for, and I'm trying to think how I should describe this movie. It definitely seems like more of a psychological, like, thriller with, like, some slapstick comedy-type elements to it. And it deals with like sideshow artists and like their entourage, and they just end up terrorizing people in the woods. So there's some really wonky imagery that I've seen from at least the trailer. So I definitely have my eyes on that as well. So really quite a bit going on here. So if any of those movies interest you, go either, you know, go out and get the, you know, 4-day pass or whatever for $30, or, you know, you can get the single day for $10 for the access for 24 hours. Either way, very easy to find the value there. And heck, you could even watch a world premiere for one of the festival movies as well. Now moving into the Netflix side of things, or really just TV in general, we got a little bit of TV series news, and this is something that we actually talked about on Tuesday, during Twisted Tuesday, and that is that Netflix is adapting The Grudge into a series. And by The Grudge, of course, it's a Japanese one, so it is Ju-on. So Ju-on back to the silver screen with this, and this series will be coming to Netflix on July 3rd. The official trailer is online, and, you know, this is, you know, I'm kind of anxious to see what they're going to do because, you know, past couple of Grudge movies have been a little bit of a letdown, at least on the, you know, Americanized versions of said series.
True, but that trailer, when we watched it in between movies, freaked me out. I was like, whoa. So I do have high hopes because it's not just a sequel. It's not a sequel to The Grudge. It's a prequel. That's exactly what it is. It's a prequel to Ju-on and everything like that, and how all of this came to happen. So that's actually exciting for me and you, and it should be exciting for all of us who love horror. I love prequels if they're done right.
Yeah, so most of the details about this series outside of the actors are unknown at this time. But if you're unfamiliar with Ju-on, it's basically this franchise that centers around a haunted house that has this curse that enrages people who die. And they essentially become like these vengeful spirits who only go out to further perpetuate the curse. And it's just been going on for, you know, I'm trying to think. It was like over 4 decades ago when like the story was based off of when this all started to happen. So this has been a series that has definitely had its fair share of installments. There have been 13 films altogether in this franchise. 4 of them were on the stateside release in the U.S., the other 9 being part of the Japanese installment. And, you know, it's been a while since we've really seen adaptations for J-horror. So I'm even more intrigued by that, knowing that we really haven't gotten anything within that genre here as of late, outside of like the US reboots or remakes or reimaginations, whatever label you want to put on it.
Yeah.
So outside of that, Vosh, we have one other series that we need to talk about.
Okay.
And this one is definitely more, I would say, mainstream, just because it does air on FX. And that is the American Horror Story.
Mm-hmm.
So their creator, Ryan Murphy, actually took to Instagram to announce that there is a spinoff in the works for AHS that will feature 1 hour episodes that are all contained. Now, the name of said series is American Horror Stories. So, yes, I know, very original. Don't know how he came up with that. But, you know, it's smart to not diverge too much from the path in this case, because otherwise people might not know what the heck it is. But right now, a lot of people are like, well, what's going on with American Horror Story? Because season 10 was slated to release in 2020. I know they had plans of doing a summer shoot. But, you know, due to everything going on right now, everything's just kind of like up in the air. But Murphy did know that, you know, the shoot during the summer is very dependent on a specific moment. And he mentioned, like, it was a weather-dependent show. Now, I don't know what the hell that means, if, like, they need to have, like, a beach set in or some sort of, like, water elements. Now I'm just more intrigued by the new season whenever it should come out. But, you know, we have seen from AHS, and, you know, I'll be honest, I'm definitely behind on this series by quite a few seasons. But this is a series that has always been, you know, the story is played out through the entirety of the season. And there have been quite a few moments or seasons within AHS that kind of tends to run out of steam, like, halfway through the season. Which is why, like, I'm so anxious to check out the spinoff, because everything's going to be contained within one episode. So each episode will basically be telling its own story. I feel like the shorter format is going to do wonders for this series in particular.
Yeah, I think so too. Because what I'll do is I'll watch AHS, and then, like you said, after about six episodes or so, it'll lose its luster. And it's just like, eh. And then I'll just fall off and stop watching it. But if it's just one standalone episode that's by itself, that where it has, you know, a beginning, middle, and end, then I'm good with that. Then I'm there for it.
Absolutely. So keep an eye on that. And of course, if we do get more updates for AHS Season 10, we will be sure to let you guys know. So that leads us to our now playing for this week. And on Tuesday, we sat down and we had an Into the Dark double feature consisting of Puka, which was released in 2018. And most recently, Puka Lives, which is, you know, the only sequel so far to date in the Into the Dark series. And, you know, this one released with the current season. So, looking at the plot of Puka Lives, this is a movie that surrounds a group of 30-something friends who all went to high school together. And what they end up doing is they create this creepypasta about Puka. And, you know, this is after a night of debauchery, a lot of drinking involved, you know, so, you know, they're smoking, of course, and all of this is done because this writer is looking to get back at this YouTube influencer who is basically set out to destroy this man's career. So he thought it would be funny to create this creepypasta revolving around Puka, and this thing ends up going viral, ends up becoming the most viral thing on the internet, and it essentially manifests like this murderous version of Puka, which kind of like takes different forms throughout the movie as well. So we'll definitely go into, you know, some other tidbits about the movie, but let's talk about the body count in this movie, because as a sequel, Vosh, you know, according to the rules, you know, dating back to Scream 2, the body count always has to be higher. And that was, in fact, true for Puka.
That was true. It was. And let's start with number one, shall we? The first body count was David. It was a cameo, actually, by Will Wheaton. Actually, when I saw him on screen, it was great. I was like, oh, that's Will Wheaton. And then he was stabbed in the heart / body multiple times with scissors by Ellie. And number two would next be Ellie. She actually doused herself in gasoline and lit on fire.
Yeah.
And this is all in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. And it's important to note here that Ellie was actually the creator of Pooka. And Pooka at this time was wanting to do like this rebrand. They were wanting to do a new design.
The company, yes.
For the toy. And Ellie did not take kindly to that. And, you know, Will Wheaton's character was a little abusive to the Pooka dolls within the house and definitely came back to bite him in the ass. And, you know, Ellie's story is essentially the centerpiece of the creepypasta. And, you know, we'll have more about that here in just a few.
Yes. And the third person on the body count is Jax, who is the YouTuber or streamer, Twitch streamer, who was stabbed at the top of the head of his head with scissors before getting stabbed 10 times in the back by Pooka. Now, he was trying to ruin this guy's career. And then when he found that this Pooka, you know, creepypasta story goes viral, of course, he's going to do everything that goes viral. He's just the main man in everything that's the now. So he decides to do the challenge or whatever it is. And then it comes back to bite him in the butt, too. Actually, it bites him in the head with scissors. Well, it stabs him in the head with scissors and then in the back 10 times. Next, we have Andy. That would be number four. He was suffocated by the hands of Pooka in an elevator. And he actually works at the company who made Pooka. Number five would be off camera. You don't really quite see it, but it's the Berlin family of four, which is a wife and three kids. By ? We don't know. Possibly by Pooka. We believe so. But Alex Butler, it was arrested in hysterics.
Yeah. So the dad essentially was blamed for the murder this family.
Exactly.
But, you know, just going based off of the other kills in a movie, we can only assume that Pooka ended up stabbing everyone with a pair of scissors because that was the trademark of the Pooka entity.
Exactly. And I'm guessing that with this this part of the movie and the body count and how it was done, Pooka just got away really quickly. And it was just in and out, quick, done. We don't need to see it. It leaves something to be, you know, your imagination. At least something to your imagination. And then now the body count, since the family of four was killed by Pooka, now it jumps to nine. And the next is Becky. She is clawed to death and folded like an accordion in the pantry by Pooka, which was actually funny. this movie was quite funny, really, anyway.
Yeah, as Felicia Day noted to her daughter in this movie, oh, Becky, you know, she's just sleeping.
She's just sleeping. It's okay. Number 10 on the body count would be Demon Pooka. That was stabbed in the heart with scissors along with the original Pooka doll by Derek, who was the writer who created in the movie. He created the creepypasta. He was the one whose career had been in shambles. And then now the body count is at 10 when they killed Demon Pooka. Now, number 11, which is the last one, is Amir, who actually also works for the Pooka, the company who makes Pooka. It's also off camera, and he's the first victim of the Apookalypse, which became a craze online as well. And once we all know, if it becomes a craze online, then it has to be true or it's going to happen, right? Well, in this movie, that's what happened. So there's your body count. It's at 11, and go check it out if you want to check out all the gory details and how these characters were killed in the movie, and check out Pooka. But let's go to Totem for other tidbits.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, this is really the only time we've actually gotten a sequel within the Into the Dark series. And I remember early on, like in that opening sequence, when we see Ellie and Will Wheaton, we see an award that is like, you know, just chilling out there. And it's that Puka actually received the toy of the year. And I was like, wait a minute. This doesn't make any sense. Because Puka, for all intents and purposes, in the original, had a great launch, but was ultimately a failure because of the amount of defects that they had during the launch. So I don't know, like, why there's this huge rush for them to suddenly be like, oh yeah, you know, we want to rush out Puka 2.0. That part, like, kind of confused me. But the fact that it won Toy of the Year, despite that initial failure, didn't really make too much sense to me.
No, but I don't think a lot of this movie made sense. If you watch it, it's the sequel of Puka. The first movie Puka, it was more serious. Mm-hmm. This one was just a lot funny. It was a lot more funny. It was just hilarious to us. It changed tunes pretty much. But keep going.
Yeah, it did. Outside of that, there were actually quite a few references to other movies out there. I know when the creepypasta went viral, you saw a lot of like the social media comments, one of which directly referenced You Dying in 7 Days. So a direct shout out to The Rain, you know, which we actually just talked about last week.
Yes,
there are also nods to Ghostbusters, Fight Club, Grumpy Cat, the Wolfman, because they directly talk about using silver bullets to kill Puka, as yes. kind of like a joke. Yes. Also, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, primarily the, it's only a flesh wound type
yeah.
of scene, as well as some shout-outs to Army of Darkness. So actually quite a bit kind of contained within this. But... What I liked about this sequel is when it came to the creation of the creepypasta, they actually wanted to tie in the original, like, murder sequence between the Puka creator, Ellie, as well as David. And, you know, like, for a while there, I was like, okay, so these scenes go viral and, you know, Puka starts to evolve over the course of time, and sure, it definitely got a little outlandish in spots with the actual design. But, you know, I didn't necessarily mind the creature design in particular as it, you know, continued over the course of the 90 or whatever minutes. But it definitely got to the point where at the end, I was like, okay, so if they're just writing things down and they're making things happen or creating them to exist, mm-hmm. I'm like, well, at what point are they going to introduce a way to kill Puka? And eventually they do.
But I remember when you said that.
the way that they were going about killing Puka was everything was revolving around doing a particular series of events before the launch of Puka 2.0, which Amir had like this giant presentation for. And, you know, like some of the other characters were trying to stall him, trying to, you know, make sure that the kill happens so the apocalypse doesn't happen, which unfortunately they fail because all of the Puka dolls do come alive at the very tail end here. But it essentially like revolves around stabbing the original Puka doll, which is actually held within Amir's office. Now, before that, they wanted to incorporate the burning of the Puka doll. But that wasn't the way that ended up happening, and they ended up kind of like tweaking it as it would go along. But, you know, it got me thinking, like, we really haven't seen a lot of stuff within the genre that revolves around creepypasta. I was trying to think, like, the first thing that would probably come to mind, and I'll be honest, I skipped this one because I had no expectations from this movie. Slender Man was recently done. You know, initially a game turned into a movie.
Mm-hmm. I skipped that one as well. We should probably revisit it or go back.
I wouldn't even know what to pair with that, to be honest. It would have to be probably another terrible movie. I don't know. Either way. Like, when it comes to sequels, obviously the distinct difference between the two is the overall tone of the movie. As you mentioned, the first one is definitely a little bit more serious, deals with more of the family structure and basically the dad going insane, essentially, by donning the Puka mascot. And, you know, he doesn't realize that he's actually the bad guy in this situation. Well, all of this is happening. He just assumes that there's a murderous giant plush doll going around murdering everyone in this town. And this one definitely felt more, you know, off kilter. It was definitely more horror comedy than anything. So, you know, when you're comparing the two, Vosh, obviously two completely different styles of films. Which one did you enjoy more after revisiting the original before this one?
Oh, so I like Puka, the first movie. Even though with the issues with the family and everything like that and being more serious and abuse and all that other stuff and domestic abuse and everything like that, it gets to you and it's kind of like scary, but also just kind of resonates in your brain a little bit. I was looking for something. I was actually looking for something different in the Puka Lives, and that's exactly what I got. And I got something totally opposite and funny, and I love it. I love Felicia Day. So having her and Will Wheaton too. So having them in this movie, and when I saw him in the first part of the movie, I was like, oh, this is gonna be good. So I would say I like them both in their own right, but I was more impressed with Puka Lives because it just it was one of those funny horror movies that I just love. Mm-hmm. Just like you said, when they referenced Army of Darkness, I literally have an Army of Darkness poster on my wall that is framed. Man, I watch it over and over again. I love goofy, funny horror and stuff like that. And that's what Puka Lives is. So I'm going to go with Puka Lives over Puka.
Yeah.
For
me, I feel a little bit different. You know, I really do enjoy horror comedy, but it just felt like the first two thirds of Puka Lives was kind of like all over the place, where I'm just like, okay, like at some point we're going to get to the end. Like it felt like when we got to the end, it was essentially not ending because they go through all of these efforts only for the Puka Lives to happen anyways. It's not a feel-good ending by any means, but it just makes you wonder.
Like, there's going to be a sequel.
There's going to be
another movie, and that's okay.
I don't know. It's one of those scenes where is Puka going to be like the only thing within this franchise that evolves into a series? Because so far, it's the only one with a sequel, so it's the only thing that has a recurring theme to it.
Yeah, I see what you mean. But it's okay. We'll see what happens. Hopefully, it looks like it is going to come out with another movie because of the apocalypse and stuff like that and everything. And it looks like it's going to be moving still into, like, you know, horror, funny horror, you know, and stuff like that movie. And hopefully they do a really good job the next time and stuff like that when it comes to you and stuff like that and everything. Or maybe they'll twist it and go back to being serious. You never know. I don't know if I would like Puka going more than three movies though.
Yeah.
I thought they were going to end it with two, but
there were definitely aspects that I enjoyed about it. Particularly when it comes to social commentary, when it comes to, you know, online, you know, personas and, you know, just saying things on the internet having direct consequences to that. Of course, all of these people that got murdered were essentially found naughty by Puka in this case. But, you know, when it comes to the ending in particular, I don't mind that it wasn't super conclusive, but it's one of those things where just when I thought they were going to keep going, it just ends. Like, I wanted to see it keep progressing at that point, knowing that their backs were essentially up against the wall because they essentially just locked themselves into, like, the storage facility within this building. And then the credits just roll, and it's just like, wait, what? Like, it was just about to get good, and then we cut away.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you on that one.
Yeah, and really,
so like, what is your Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, like, the only other thing that I don't like a lot within the genre is relegating things to off-screen deaths. I want to see the kills happen. I feel like that does...
Yeah.
Cutting away from the action like that, and, like, there are ways you can do it and still leave things to the imagination and still showcase a little bit more rather than just a direct cut. Like, we've seen films, like in a clawing situation, you could still see the blood splatter on, like, a wall or something, and you can see, like, the shadow play. You know, things like that, and we just didn't quite get that.
Yep. No,
so, that's true. So for me, on a scale of... You know, we'll do stars again, because that seems to be probably one of the more common things. I'd probably say out of 4 stars, I would only have it at 2. Puka,
I was gonna have it as a 3.
Okay.
But go ahead, Puka.
Yeah,
Puka. What's your score for Puka?
Puka in itself, I'd probably keep it at 3.
Okay.
So a little bit of a step down with the sequel. But, you know... If they decide to do a third one, of course we're going to watch it. And based off of the non-ended, I can only hope that it's going to pick up directly after Puka Lives.
Yeah, I hope it does. It had better, because if it doesn't, then it's not going to make sense. I'm going to be like, "What? What are you guys doing?" And then it'll go back down to a 2. But yeah, I'm giving Puka Lives 3. I'm giving Puka 3.5.
All right. So, of course, you know, we are near on the start of another week, which means Twisted Tuesday is a couple of days away. On Tuesday, that would be May 19th, we will be doing a slasher double feature. We'll be revisiting one of the more iconic chase scenes within, honestly, not just within a genre, but just film history. In Prom Night, the original, of course, released in 1980. And we will be following up with Hello, Mary Lou, Prom Night 2, which was released in 1987, which was, in fact, written and filmed as The Haunting of Hamilton High, but marketed as a sequel. And I'll admit, like, it's been a very long time since I've actually seen Prom Night 2. I don't really remember too much about it, but Prom Night is always one that I go back to. And...
Yeah.
When it comes to remakes, the amount of disdain I still have after the Prom Night remake, I probably consider that one to be the worst of the crop that we have seen out of any remake. It's just on that level where literally every single kill within that movie is the exact same thing. And I just felt like they just carbon copied every scene in that movie. And then they're like, oh. There we go, PG-13, we'll slap it on, make a little bit of money, and then we'll just call it a day.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. That's what you get. Here you go. And you're like, no. But it's still going to be a fun fit Twisted Tuesday. Come join us if you like.
Yep, and all that information can be found, of course, on our website, as well as the schedule for Twisted Tuesday, I will definitely be updating probably after this Tuesday. That way we can get the June lineup up as well.
Right on.
With that being said, Vash, I think it's time that we close things out for tonight. So, guys, please, if you want to help us out, the best thing to do for any podcast out there is to head on over to iTunes and leave and write a review. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know if there is anything in particular that you guys would like to see us incorporate into Handle with Scare. And of course, we are open ears, so feel free to reach out to us via social media. So Vash, why don't you go ahead and let our listeners know how they can reach out and contact the show?
You can contact us at our email, handlewithscarepod@gmail.com, for our email. Our website would be handlewithscarepod.com. Our Discord would be discordapp.com. And Twitter, it would be @handlewithscare. And Totem, how can they contact you on Twitter and social media personally?
Yeah, I'm primarily mostly involved on Twitter. That is @totallydrunkctr. And I do stream occasionally on Twitch as well at twitch.tv/totallydrunk. But Vash, where can listeners contact you?
You can contact me primarily as well on Twitter at Vashti Leah B. And my handle, my fun handle is Vashti.
So with that being said, guys, we hope that you come out to Cass on Tuesday for our prom night double feature.
Yes.
And, you know, I know for a lot of people, prom was essentially canceled. So, you know, what better way to experience it than by the chase sequence in that movie? I can't think of a better way. But it should be, should be a good night, and 80s slashers always deliver. And if we don't see you then, we'll catch you next week for episode number 3. You guys take care and have a good night.